Enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com. I'm HRN Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're focusing on water. You'll hear some disturbing news from an NYC investigative reporter.
Here lies the problem, how much we don't know about water tanks.
Katie Kiefer reports on water woes in the Heartland.
Their water is heavily polluted with nitrates, which are coming from agricultural chemical applications on fields and running off into their water table.
And we'll check in with Dave Arnold, who's about to open a new bar that will serve some pretty fancy H2O.
It is hardcore.
So pour up a tall glass of ice water and be refreshed by this week's episode of Meat in 3, available on heritageradionetwork.org, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to this week's Why Food podcast. I'm your co-host, Jenny Dorsey.
And I'm Ethan Frisch.
If you remember, Why Food is about the podcast for entrepreneurs and innovative people who have left their former careers and jumped into the food and beverage industry. Today, we're welcoming Yuan Ji, who is the CEO and co-founder of Erstwhile Mezcal, an artisanal small batch mezcal importer and brand from Brooklyn. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Jenny. It's great to be here with you guys.
So we're just going to jump right in the way that we usually do with your aha moment. You started your career in as a lawyer.
That's
working
right.
On antitrust cases.
Correct.
And now you have a mezcal company, which is fairly new, right? You just you launched the company recently and you're working on your first shipment now, I guess.
Yes, it's pretty new. I was doing the groundwork a year ago, but I did quit my big law job fairly recently in February this year.
Congratulations.
It's a big step.
Yes.
So what was the moment when you realized that corporate or law in general wasn't for you and mezcal was?
When we think about an aha moment, I have to step back and think about the big picture here is that as individuals, I think we all respond to certain things and values much more strongly than others. And for me, like I was telling you guys over lunch earlier, is that for as long as I've remembered, the things that I really gravitate toward are anything involving adventure, romance, beauty, and learning.
You know, sure, sounds good.
All of the above.
Yeah.
And so that's the big picture. And in terms of a aha moment of leaving the law and diving into mezcal, I would say there are three layers to it. And, you know, we can dive into each of them more deeply if you want. And those three things are why I love Oaxaca, which is where our mezcal is from, why I love mezcal, and lastly, why I want to start a business and devote myself to those two things.
And while you were, this all kind of started when you took a trip to Oaxaca. So
yes.
As you were meeting these mezcaleros and seeing that process, was there a specific moment where you realized like mezcal is going to be the answer to all three of these different things that I want to do and pursue?
Right. So we took our first trip to Oaxaca in November 2015, just for vacation as a tourist. And prior to that point, I had never traveled in Mexico, so I spoke zero Spanish. So, you know, I was a blank slate. I had no idea what to expect, and let alone how this place was going to change my life so dramatically. So Oaxaca is beautiful, just saturated with color, and every detail is gorgeous. There's colonial architecture. Down to the details, like the trees. I love the trees of Oaxaca. I have my favorite trees in Oaxaca.
What are the trees?
So I have three favorite trees. One is the flame tree. Is this gorgeous bright orange red, and they bloom at different times of the year. One is they call it primavera, so it's a very gorgeous bright yellow. And then Jacaranda is like a purple tree, and they're just outrageous. They don't hold anything back when they flower. So, okay, so that's Oaxaca. And then, so getting back to Mezcal, I took a day trip in the Oaxacan countryside, Mezcal day trip. First time I was there just to see how artisanal mezcal is made. And that was basically my first introduction. Prior to that, I had tasted mezcal, but had no idea about the process that went into it. And it's...
Just tell us what is mezcal, if any of our listeners aren't familiar.
Sure. Mezcal is a liquor distilled from agave, which is a plant. And they're just like wine. There are different kinds of varietals of agave, as in different types of grapes in wine. And anything made from any kind of agave plant is mezcal. So it's a very broad category. And
so tequila is technically a mezcal.
Tequila is, yes, it's a mezcal. It's one type of mezcal, and it's a subset in this big broad family known as mezcal, because tequila is made only from one type of agave, commonly known as the blue agave.
And so, sorry, back to your story. Yes. About this visit to the mezcaleros.
Right. So this day trip, just visiting different mezcaleros, it really blew my mind, because it is so labor intensive, and just like a lot of things you do with your hand, it's very meditative and real, for lack of a better description. It basically... everything you put into it is what you get out of this liquor. There's no, it's not industrialized at all. There's no machines and extra artificial ingredients, chemicals you're adding to it. It just all came from that plant.
So walk us briefly through the process from the agave plant to having mezcal in a bottle or drinking some, which we're going to do in a minute.
But. Right. Absolutely. So how mezcal is made, artisanal mezcal, first you have to get a batch of the agave that you're going to make the mezcal from. So this could, if you're a mezcalero, this could be agave growing on your land, or often... time you have to go somewhere that land somewhere else and buy the agave, because the fact is it takes a long time for agave to mature, even with, say, Espadín, which is the most common, fastest maturing variety of agave. It takes somewhere between 5 to 7 years. Wow. For that plant to mature. So that's really a long time. So unless you are a land mogul and just have infinite supply of agave, you know, it's not realistic to get all your supply from your own land. So you you know, you have to get out there and buy a lot.
What does the agave plant look like?
A picture is worth 1,000 words. I didn't bring agave to the studio and show you guys today. I recommend Google Image, they can be as small as
The size of a basketball,
the
maybe?
The size of a basketball.
Yeah.
Or all the way to as tall as I am. I'm about 5'8", and definitely much thicker. I cannot put my arm around it with all the leaves. The leaves shoot out from the center of the plant. So they vary a lot in size.
And you said it takes 5 to 7 years for some varietals, and you mentioned earlier at lunch, up to 20 years from
correct,
some of the wild.
Yes.
And after you harvest it, you actually have to replant the whole thing. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So once you harvest, agave for mezcal, you go for the core known as a piña. It looks like a pineapple.
Piña means pineapple in
Spanish. Piña is actually pineapple in Spanish. So you have to chop down all the leaves and get to the core. Once it's harvested, that agave is gone, so you would have to replant or find another crop. Yeah. Agave somewhere else.
And then those piñas get roasted?
So those piñas, you can either go out in a field, chop it down on your own, like you go to a orchard to pick apples, or they're already pre-chopped. You load them onto a truck, bring back to your palenque, which is the place where you make the mezcal, and the next step would be roasting. With artisanal mezcal, it's the agave is roasted in an open pit oven that is lined with stone. So you would have to light a fire and cover it with stone. And this entire time during roasting, the fire is going underneath the stone.
It could be the for heat several days, right?
You would have to go for several days. And of course, the number of days depends on the mezcalero. Each of them have their own method and recipe, but definitely several days for sure.
And then after the roasting, what's next?
So after the roasting, so backing up a little bit, you don't just throw these piñas into the oven and call it a day, right? You have to prep the oven, let it smoke out. You don't want this, the mezcalero would know the best, like when to put the piñas into the oven, but you definitely don't want this, all the smoke coming out. There's a point at which the oven's ready. With giant piñas, they would cut up the piña slightly, so it's not this huge entire piña going into the oven. So in large chunks, conducive to roasting. Then they load the piñas into the oven and cover it with tarp, or could be the fiber from a previous roasting, and let it go for a few days. And then you take them out of the oven and let it cool down. And the next step after roasting would be grinding down the piñas, which are now roasted and sweet and caramelized, but still fibrous because of the fiber in the piña where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
So the grinding could, there are different ways to do it. You could do it in a stone mill pulled by a horse or donkey. I've seen mezcaleros who do it by hand, which is really hard backbreaking work with essentially a giant wooden stick. So they could put it in a pit or a vat and just pound the heck out of
it. How long does that take?
It depends. It could, I would think it takes days. It takes days because of the size of the piñas that went in for roasting. And depending on how many people you have working, it could be faster if you have more people. But for sure, days. The grinding is a...
And so does the roasting impart that kind of like smoky flavor to mezcal versus like is tequila roasted at all?
So tequila, I don't believe they roast the... There is such a thing as artisanal tequila, and I'm by no means expert on tequila, but I believe with tequila, the unique thing about artisanal mezcal is they roast the agave, slow roasting in an earthen oven, and I don't believe they do that with tequila.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly that's the norm, not the exception. So
then what's the next step after the roasting? After the grinding, right?
After the grinding. So after the grinding, so now you have, the next step would be fermentation. So now the piñas are roasted. They are broken down into smaller chunks so that the sugar that's in the piñas are conducive to fermentation. So you load them into wooden vats and add water to it. And with artisanal mezcal, it's open vat fermentation. So basically just natural yeast, whatever's floating in the air, that particular year. It could change maybe from year to year, and just let it do its magic. And, which just goes to show why artisanal mezcal is very much art, not science. I mean, unless you want to go out there and try to scientifically
write down what
is this yeast? You don't know exactly. Yeah. And, so you don't add anything additional, any additional sugar or additional yeast. You just let it ferment naturally for a few days in the vats.
And then it gets distilled.
And then it goes into the still, correct? So the still, there are different types of still. The mezcaleros that I partner with now all use copper stills, but you could also use clay still, for example, which I think does make a difference to the taste.
How does it impact the taste?
So it's hard to generalize, but if I were to generalize, I would say with with clay stills, there's this kind of minerally umami.
Do you prefer it, or it's just kind of one of the many variables?
There's many mezcal that I love made from copper still. Like I said, our first product line, it's all mezcal made from copper stills. So I definitely don't have this, exclusive preference for mezcal made from clay pots. That said, it can be very good.
Well, so you brought some mezcals for us to taste.
Yes. I want to talk about this interesting distillation process. We were talking over lunch about hanging raw meat over the distillation.
Yes, yes,
can
yes.
you tell our listeners about that? Because I've never heard about it before.
Right. So mezcal, artisanal mezcal, by default, it's double distillation. So you distill once, comes out of still, put it back in the still, distill twice. So that's the default. What we were talking about over lunch is a type of mezcal called pechuga. Pechuga is not, so most of the time when you refer to mezcal, you refer to the agave variety. This is Espadin, this is a Tobala, this is Araqueño. And we hear people refer to a pechuga, that's an exception. We're not talking about the type of agave. It's more the method of how this mezcal is made. Pechuga is by default triple distillation. So it's an extra distillation compared to other types of mezcal. And pechuga is chicken breast in Spanish, as you guys know. So what they do is I don't know who came up with this.
One drunken mezcal
one mezcalero once upon a time thought it would be a good idea to take a raw piece of presumably chicken breast, suspended on the top of the still. So, you know, imagine that it's not submerged in the mash with the agave. It's suspended in the still, not touching the liquid. And as the distillation process happens, I would say it basically sweats the chicken breast.
Steams the chicken breast?
Yeah. Steams.
Can you eat the chicken breast after it's been
I would totally try.
I personally have not eaten the pechuga because it's not very appetizing looking. It's kind of this desiccated.
All right, never mind.
It's overcooked.
Yeah, so, but you know.
All right, bad idea.
bad idea.
Yeah. So what flavor does the pechuga give to the mezcal? Why are people interested in this?
So, again, what a pechuga tastes like can vary, depending on the mezcalero. But I would say if I were to generalize, it adds this extra savory umaminess that actually reminds you of something meaty, like chicken breast. It actually makes sense. And, you know, with it's not just the chicken breast. With pechugas, you can also add other things into the still, like spices and fruit. It could be a special thing that the mezcalero likes to make maybe during the holidays as mm-hmm. the special festive distillation.
So you can add multiple types of meat as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So when they're different, when you get a pechuga, it could be, but not necessarily always chicken breast. You know, I've had excellent pechuga made from quail, mm-hmm. Rabbit, turkey. You can even have an organic or a vegetarian vegan pechuga, meaning you don't put any meat in it, but it still goes through the triple distillation with spices. So it's
you can hang a tofu above it.
Exactly. You can make tofu pechuga.
A bunch of mushrooms.
Why not? Mushroom. Amazing.
Yeah. So what'd you bring us to taste?
So today I brought a few distillations. Two of them are from our flagship product line.
Can you describe this logo for us while we're looking at it too? Because I love it.
Yes. So the Erstwhile Mezcal logo, which is embossed on all of our bottles, is a woman warrior princess persona type riding a velociraptor. could be definitely in motion, potentially flying or in midair. And the woman is holding what is called a quixote, which is part of the agave plant. When it flowers and matures, there's a stalk that shoots out from the center of the agave. And it's very dramatic and beautiful.
What are you representing with the logo? What's the brand message?
The brand message, I would say, it's what we're trying to convey with our brand. It's quirky. It's artistic. It's original. It's a little old fashioned, but in the best way possible. It's got a velociraptor.
It's
awesome. It's a woman owned business. That's not the most important aspect of our business. When I think about Erstwhile Mezcal, first and foremost, it's about excellent mezcal. Mm-hmm. But the fact that I am a woman, and oftentimes with in the liquor alcohol industry, it's a very male-centric field in advertising and just all other aspects.
Yeah.
So that's why there's a woman warrior riding the Velociraptor.
I love it.
Yeah. can we taste some? We're looking at these beautiful.
Yes, let's
bottles.
Do it. Let's
and can you also describe to us what these the little tasting glasses look like? Because they're glass. They're kind of rounder and larger lips.
Yes. So I brought some copitas for our tastings today. So traditionally, when you taste mezcal, they're served in these shallow glasses that are kind of like. What would be a parallel?
They kind of remind me of votive holders. Yeah. Like, you know, the floating votive holders.
Yeah, they could be votive holders, a little wider. And the top has a wide neck, so it's conducive to smelling the nose of the mezcal even before you taste it. Mm. And you can also do tastings in these gourds from, you know, plant. But they're called jicaras. They tend to break when I travel with them and from the humidity in New York versus Oaxaca. Mm-hmm. So, usually I just bring, I use glass copitas instead.
Nice. Yeah.
All right. So, Yuan's going to pour out some mezcal for us. This is the exciting part of the,
I brought some ice because I want to have ice in my mezcal, but can you tell us like when you're tasting, how do you usually taste? What are you looking for? How do you determine if, you know, this Mescaleros mezcal is something you want to put your brand name on?
Right. So my personal preference with mezcal is that, just like, how I look for an interesting, complex, well-rounded mezcal versus there are some mezcals that are just very straightforward. You know, you taste X, Y, and Z, and within the first 5 seconds, and bam, it's gone. And I kind of like a mezcal that goes through transformations that you don't. It's not all that. Meets the eye right away. You smell something and then you taste it and you taste different flavors. And then after a few seconds, you taste something ash or smoke. But it doesn't kick in until a few seconds into it. So, just like I was telling you guys over lunch earlier, I like my mezcal, how I like people, how I like my friends, my close circle. It's well-rounded, nuanced, interesting, complex people in mezcal.
Yeah, we're not interested in the straightforward
one-dimensional characters.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the mezcaleros that you're working with in this first shipment. What are some of their stories and how did you meet them?
So I am working with two mezcaleros right now, both based in Santiago Matalan, which is about an hour outside of Oaxaca City. And I met them several times throughout the years. I would say how I decided to work with them was September last year. We went on a trip to Oaxaca specifically to taste interview mezcalero, so to speak. We basically spent 2 or 3 days going to different villages, trying mezcal with different mezcaleros. That one of our friends at Local Contacts put us in touch with to figure out and narrow down who do we want to supply our first shipment of mezcal.
What were you looking for?
You know, I didn't have a specific list. So first and foremost, they have to make excellent mezcal. We decided early on that excellence is not something.
No mediocre mezcal.
No
here.
Mediocre mezcal ever. We don't compromise on excellence. And so that's definitely key. And just other things. Sometimes you just, you know, like you feel a spiritual connection, like I was saying earlier, with the place or with this family, more so than you do with others. For example, one of our mezcaleros that we're working with, you know, it's very much a family business. They have a daughter who is a little younger than me, but essentially about our age, who went to law school and decided to come back into the family to work in the family business. And, you know, that's not necessary it's not something I was necessarily looking for when I set out to interview mezcaleros, but that really resonated with me. It's, you know, this smart young woman who it's great to see women in the mezcal business in general, just
And she rides a velociraptor around the palenque.
Absolutely. All day, every day.
Oh, so I'm curious. After the agave plant flowers, and you can't harvest the piña anymore right. after that, what do you do with the plant?
What do you do with the plant?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's you just kind of have to wait for a future generation. I guess you could use the leaves for maybe firewood, but in terms of mezcal, that plant is gone.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
So tell us what we're about to taste.
So we are tasting Espadín from, this is one of the mezcal from our flagship product line.
And Espadín is the varietal. Espadín
is the varietal of the agave. That's fastest maturing. Takes about 5 to 7 years to mature.
And what are the flavor characteristics of this particular mezcal?
So I would like to have you guys try it first, and then okay. I'd be interested to see what you guys think it tastes like.
Well, Ethan's really good at describing things.
Uh-oh. So the pressure's on. and lucky listener gets to listen to us drinking
don't say
mezcal in
fresh
the cut
carton hose.
Yeah. Yeah, right. All right, let's try this. The copitas are kind of tricky to drink from.
Are they?
You got to like tip them up.
Yeah.
Well, when I smell it, it's very sweet and like vegetal and smoky. But I mean, the mezcal that I see most frequently is the one in the green bottle. So I never knew actually what color it's supposed to be. I was always under the impression maybe it had like a slight tint to it because of the roasting, but it's actually completely clear.
The green bottles you're talking, I'm guessing you're talking about Del Maguey, which all of their bottles are green. So this is a Joven mezcal. So it's young. It's not, rested or aged. So normally this is what it looks like. It's clear.
Yeah, it's a really nice balance of sweet and vegetal. It tastes sort of like a green tomato or a tomatillo or something like that. Maybe a little bit like a roasted tomato. I don't know, Jenny. What do you taste?
I think about randomly like when I was in college, I drank a lot of aloe juice. It doesn't taste like that necessarily, but it has that kind of like refreshing. There's like that hint of sweetness, like kind of. Yeah, brings me back.
So, how much smoke do you guys taste in this? Because
I wouldn't say smoke, definitely a roastiness, but not necessarily a smokiness.
It's really light. One of the things that I think people are nervous about smoky liquors, it's like it's so overbearing. Mm-hmm. But I think this is, as you were saying earlier, it kind of you taste everything else first, and then you get a little bit of that like charred.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I want to mention about mezcal is that people associate with. Smoke. It's like, oh, it's that smoky liqueur, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not, mezcal can be, but does not necessarily need to be smoky. The smoke comes from the roasting and the oven part.
Mm-hmm.
So with this mezcal, to the extent there is smoke and kind of that spicy, peppery kick, for me at least, it kicks in a few seconds after. Like when I first tasted, I don't taste that smoke and peppery at all. It doesn't kick in until a few seconds later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it definitely has a peppery, like a black pepper or a tingle. There's also like a sort of a vanilla sensation, not even a flavor, really. Mm-hmm. Just like,
see, I told you he was very,
you're very good.
Vanilla on
a sommelier of mezcal.
I just eat a lot of spices, so I have vanilla.
Is there such a term for like a mezcal expert?
Well, there are mezcaleros, so master mezcalero. Those are people who make mezcal. I'm not sure if there's a term for the equivalent of a sommelier for mezcal.
You could make one.
Mezcalomier.
Maybe you would be and tell us about this farm, this producer, this mezcalero.
So this is the mezcalero who made this Espadín that we're tasting now is Juan Hernandez Mendez, based in Santiago, Matalan. And this is the father, the family I was talking about earlier, whose daughter, Lydia, came back from law school and is awesome. She's kind of like my soul sister in mezcal. this is her father.
Okay.
And Juan is, so there, his wife, Hortensia, also comes from a mezcal family. I think 5 generations on his wife's side and at least 4 generations on one side, counting the youngest current generation. Mm-hmm. So their son, Valente, makes mezcal. So it's very much a family business.
Is there anything particular in the way he makes his mezcal that's very different from others?
They use a copper still.
Mm-hmm.
And they make... So a lot of our, we have several wild varietals of agave in our first shipment of mezcal that we're bringing in. For this shipment, all of the wild agave varietals are made by Juan. Even though he's very much, so Espadín is cultivated, so Espadín is not wild. But and he seems to really like making Espadín. But that said, we actually really love the wild agave varietals that he made.
And you mentioned earlier when we were talking at lunch that there's a limited quantity sort of thing that you are embracing for Erstwhile. Is that you're bringing in some of the best mezcals that you can get your hands on, and then once they're gone, they're gone.
Right. So that's definitely very much our brand image and how we see Erstwhile mezcal being different and unique from other brands that are available in the U.S. market today. We specialize in and we pride ourselves in finding that small batch, limited edition mezcal. If there's more of a grade, but it's not uncommon to have a distillation of only 200 liters. Mm-hmm. And maybe for some other brands, their business model is just not worth it to bring in 200, you know, going through the logistics and the red tape. Yeah. But for us, if it's amazing, we'll get our hands on it and we'll bring that in and share with as many people as possible because we love it. Mm-hmm. And the other aspect of that is that we have seven types of different mezcal in our first shipment. The number could vary in the future. Mm-hmm. But we commit ourselves to bring in a limited edition mezcal with no guarantee that we'll be able to do it again once that distillation is gone. Obviously, if we love it, we'll try our best to replicate it, use the same mezcalero, get the same type of agave, and make it happen again. But yeah. There's no guarantee that it will happen again, but we will still commit ourselves to bringing in that distillation.
Cool. You'll have some hoarders potentially on your client list. Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about the process of building the brand and the way that you're telling the story of your company and the mezcaleros you're working
with. Sounds like a plan.
What it takes to swim a coastline longer than the entire eastern seaboard and leap tall waterfalls in a single bound? What does it take to survive 200 feet deep in icy salt water? What would you be made of? Wild Alaska seafood is made of tight muscle mass, long chain omega-3s, and incredible micronutrients. It matters where your food comes from. Experience the flavor of the fittest in every bite and enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. Ask for Alaska on the menu, grocery store, or smart device. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
And we're back. You're listening to Why Food, podcast about entrepreneurs, innovators, and career changers from other industries into the food and beverage space. And today we're talking to Yuanji, who's one of our first beverage guests, actually. Mm-hmm. We haven't had other people working in
and the first beverages. Person from the liquor industry.
Oh, yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
So, she was just pouring us another tasting of a second mezcal from a different mezcalero. Tell us about this.
Yes.
One.
So the second one is also an Espadín, like the first one. But I brought this Espadín. Both are from, you know, from our product line, from Erstwhile Mezcal. I brought these two so you can try them side by side and appreciate how different mezcal can be, even made from the same agave varietal, Espadín in this case, and made by two different mezcaleros who are, you know, geographically pretty close to each other. They're both based in Santiago, Matalan.
All right, let's taste this one.
Let's try it.
Well, just on the smell, it smells really different.
Yeah.
Like it's
what does it smell like to you?
I feel like the other one was more kind of like this soft. Like if I'm thinking about smoking meat, because we were talking about meat earlier. Like if the first one was more like an apple wood, this would to me would be more of like a hickory. It's a little sharper, like just punchier. I don't know.
Yeah, it smells sort of like pears to me, or like like some crunchy, maybe a really good.
Oh, I could see
it. Crunchy apple, something like that. I'm sure this is fascinating to listen to. Sorry. We're having a lot of fun. You just got to live with it.
Would you hope that in the future, as mezcal becomes a little bit more mainstream and consumers get used to it, that brands will actually start putting the variety of agave on the bottle and we'll stop referring it to all as mezcal? Because we don't say like, oh, just bring me some red wine. It's like, oh, we want Pinot Grigio.
Absolutely. And I think any serious mezcal brand should already be doing that by specifying what kind of mezcal it is. Maybe not in big bold letters, maybe it's lost in all the other information, but certainly we do that with Erzwa Mezcal, kind of on the back of the label. There's we try to strike a balance between giving out as much information as we think is relevant, but not bogging down the mezcal drinker, the clientele, with too much information. There's only so much you can fit on the label, sure. but certainly the variety of the agave is a very basic first thing that we want to clarify. Yeah.
This one tastes very different from the last one. It's very herbal. Cilantro and parsley and dill and
still.
Yeah.
And for me, it's more savory than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And almost has that petruga quality that I was telling you guys earlier.
Okay.
Even though this is not a petruga, this is a double distillation, regular espadín.
Yeah, this reminds me more of like one of the like sailors or something that has a lot of like vegetable undertones. Maybe some roots in there, not like root vegetables, but like dried roots. That sounded not good, but yeah.
No, but root, yeah, like
root vegetables.
Yeah, a little ginger or ginseng or something like
gentian.
That. Gentian. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that this is something I've gone through with my company, and basically every startup food business, every entrepreneur has to deal with is building a brand. So how did you, because you've built, you're making a really strong statement with your brand. You have this awesome logo.
Yes.
You have a cool name. So tell us about the process of building the brand and also the way that you've balanced your own brand with the brands of the mezcaleros that you're working with.
Right. So, you know, making a brand that just seemed like an obvious thing to do from the very beginning. I didn't consider it, nothing else made sense. Of course, I need my own brand because we're taking this curatorial approach to bring in as many small batch, limited edition distillations as possible. If I didn't have a brand, I'd just call it, I don't know, what the name of the mezclero, where it's from. It gets really confusing very quickly.
Yep.
So you need I need a unifying brand to tie it all together. And you know, there are other things that are important to our brand image that needs a name to go along with it. Like I was telling you guys earlier, one thing we decided very early on is we don't compromise on excellence. For, I don't know, convenience, we're saving a buck here or there. It's just not, you could. And I think some people do that, but we decided we're not going to do that. And another part of our brand image is, I would say, it's the academic in me, the part of me that's kind of like, I don't know, writes law review articles and loves research and cares about public interest. It's that component about educating the public and learning about agave, sharing our enthusiasm, writing blog posts.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't translate directly into sales, but we do it because we love it and we want to share this information. We want to learn and share what we learn with the wider public. And I think we try to do that in our blog posts on our website, try to strike this balance between educational, but at the same time, accessible and hopefully entertaining and interesting at the same time.
And what are some of the main obstacles that you faced when after you decided you wanted to start working with these mezcaleros, importing mezcal? like just figuring out who you are in a competitive market, but also liquor is complicated.
Sure, sure. So the there's never a dull moment. There's always some problem we have to solve. I would say doing business in Mexico is is definitely a new experience.
Do you speak
for me.
Spanish now?
It's work in progress. It's definitely not perfect, but I speak a lot more Spanish than I did when I first went to Oaxaca or earlier this year, for example. And part of it, just I think bureaucracy and dealing with the government getting approval for labels mm-hmm. just has this extra level of aggravation and yep. For lack of a better word in Mexico than here in the US in comparison. So that's definitely, so for example, currently, recently I've been working on label approval. So the labels have to be approved in Mexico in addition to being approved in the US.
Uh-huh.
I've gone through both. And it's definitely a labor of love and a lot of patience. I've gone through basically, it doesn't get approved. It's not guaranteed that it'll get approved right away. And it requires kind of wading through regulations in Spanish. It's legalese and Spanish on top of it. And
what's the main holdup?
I would say one is that because we have taken this approach with bringing not just one mezcal, but a bunch, seven to be exact, of different types of mezcal. So I have to get a label approved for each mezcal. So holding all is equal, the more mezcal, the more potential for complication and delay. Another part of it is something even just as simple as spelling. You know, there are all these tildes in Spanish. Mm-hmm. The N and N with a tilde over it, for example, are two different letters and they make different sounds in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So being that I'm not a native Spanish speaker and this is a new language for me, up until this point, I would say more cavalier and less careful about spelling. It just didn't cross my mind. In my mind, this is the same letter, but mm-hmm. That was ground enough for at least one of our labels getting rejected. So now I've learned.
Now you're really careful.
Now I'm super careful, super paranoid, super.
And if only you had a lawyer on your founding team who could help you.
It just so happens we do have a lawyer on our founding team.
So tell us some of the ways that your legal experience and career have helped or not helped in launching.
I would say it's definitely been a help. I think one of the most valuable takeaways from my years of being a lawyer is not being afraid of tackling a problem that I have never dealt with before and feeling confident that eventually it will work out, that I'll find a solution, because that's really what I did a lot as a lawyer. If there's an issue that needs to be researched, I need to read through prior case precedents mm-hmm. and figure out what they say. And hopefully they are on your side. They support what you say. And if they don't so much support what you say, you phrase them and frame them in a way to support yourself as best as possible. So I think those skills go a long way when starting a business and wading through legalese and rules and regulations.
And is there something specific to having been an antitrust lawyer that translates to what you're doing?
I wouldn't say, for me, I don't think there's a direct translation or connection between antitrust and mezcal as much as I love both. But I think the indirect connection might just be who I am as a person and my values. You know, antitrust law is all about... It's pro-consumer. It's making sure the marketplace is healthy and vibrant. There are plenty of options. The pricing is fair for consumers, and no company is abusing their market power and manipulating or twisting the market in some way. And I think those same values I hold for Mezcal and for Ursula Mezcal as a brand. You know, for example, I really care about transparency. We are very open about who our mezcaleros are and their economic well-being and empowerment versus I think some brands, mezcal brands, are more secretive and protective about the source of their mezcal. For us, it's just, you know, it's we're proud and open out there with who our partner mezcaleros are. We consider them to be our partners. And if you want to, a competitor or just a mezcal lover wants to go trek to Oaxaca and show up at the Palenque and buy up all their mezcal, power to you. Yeah. Like, there's plenty of mezcal out there for everyone. So that's, I would say, the indirect connections between my values as a lawyer, as an antitrust lawyer, and now as a mezcal brand owner.
And where are you planning to sell? Like, how... You're bringing in your first shipment, which
Correct.
Is super exciting.
Yes.
What happens next?
What happens next? We would, after the mezcal shows up, crosses the border, shows up.
How, is it coming by ship or by truck? How does it actually literally move?
It could move both ways. Currently, we're thinking by truck.
Okay. It's a long drive.
Yeah, it is a long drive. And after they show up, I would, they would have to go through distribution here in the U.S. I cannot just sell a bottle of mezcal to Ethan or Jenny. If you have to buy it, you have to go through distribution.
Uh-huh.
So I have to, and distribution is different from state to state. So how it works in New York is not necessarily how it works in California. So basically I would focus on getting the distribution conduit set up and pretty much one state at a time or one geographic region at a time. And I definitely want it to be as accessible as possible to the entire country. And, you know, especially some place, you know, it's mezcal now, it's hip in big cities like LA and New York, but mm-hmm. there are plenty of cities in the Midwest, for example, that have a sophisticated food and beverage scene, and the mezcal is slim pickings. There's not many options. You see, I think they're ready for mezcal.
Yeah.
I would be so excited to bring Earthwell mezcal to these places. So yeah, I would say just client outreach, marketing, and distribution is what happens.
Well, in our last few minutes, we always do a little bit of a rapid fire series of questions. It's nothing stressful.
Okay.
Just
I'm ready.
Okay.
Okay.
just questions about you, fun facts about you so the listeners can get to know you more. So okay. I'll kick it off with my favorite question. How do you like your eggs?
How do I like my eggs? So many ways.
Your favorite way. Picking your favorite baby.
It's hard. I love all my babies. In a quiche, scrambled,
in a
fluffy.
Quiche. Okay.
A quiche. I don't think you've ever gotten
yeah,
that
we've
answer
never
gotten before.
That.
Oh. Good answer.
In a frittata.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Not over easy. I'm squeamish about, you know, runny eggs. It's just one of those things.
What did you eat for lunch as a kid?
Depending on how young we're, like how far back we're going back. I mean, I grew up in China and lived in China for the first 11 years. So I don't know what I don't remember what I was eating on a day-to-day basis. I think it's just whatever being served in the school cafeteria, or oftentimes my mom would pack lunch.
What were your favorite school lunches?
Oh man. I really love these salted duck eggs.
No,
it's
yeah.
a Chinese thing.
I just made some salted goose egg.
Ooh, that sounds amazing. They're just, have you had these?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're just, it's just that the umami of the egg mm-hmm, yolk mm-hmm. after they're ready is just out of control. Just so good.
Yeah.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Any superpower?
Mm-hmm.
I would love to fly and mind reading. Maybe mind reading more so than flying.
Oh,
what would you want to know?
Yeah,
everything: the stock market, the future of Earthwell Mezcal.
From mind reading, is there somebody who knows the future of Earthwell Mezcal?
Just isn't telling you. The god of mezcal.
When you are drinking mezcal without anybody watching, how do you drink it?
In the bathroom by yourself.
I'm pretty consistent in the way I drink mezcal.
You don't have like a way that you show other people, and then when you're at home, you actually just like mix it with orange juice or something.
I never mix it with orange juice. I sip it, it's always sips. Maybe sometimes if I'm home by myself drinking mezcal, I might take the liberty of just drinking straight out of the bottle.
Oh.
Instead of pouring it in the coffee. Maybe.
What is your favorite cocktail that's made with mezcal?
Favorite cocktail? I have several. And, you know, if you go to our website, earthlawmezcal.com, there's a cocktail section that it's work in progress, but it has at least a few cocktails that we love. One is what we call the Ursula Firebird. It involves mezcal. So Ursula mezcal, obviously, and chamomile syrup, which sounds fancier than it really is. It's essentially a simple syrup made with chamomile tea. But pineapple juice. I would say those are the key ingredients. There's something, so pineapple juice and mezcal is just a really good combination in general for all cocktails. In this particular case, adding chamomile syrup really just kicks it up a notch. Pink peppercorn for garnish. And so it's got this peppery...
Floral.
What's the best meal you've ever eaten that cost less than $5?
Best meal less than $5.
Yeah. It used to be $10, but we've lowered it.
People were too extravagant at the $9.99 price point.
Yeah. That's pretty much, I don't know, 90% of my meals in Oaxaca. It's, you know, my favorite taco stands. All of them are less than...
What's your taco filling of choice?
Taco filling of choice? There's so many.
We had Dario Wallace, who's one of the, is the co-founder of Tecombi, a few weeks ago, and his taco philosophy was that it's really about the eater. You get a taco as a base, and then you add all kinds of sauces and chilies and whatever else you want to it. So what are your taco toppings?
I'm more about the what's in the taco than the fillings are just icing on the cake. A good solid taco should stand on its own merit. With or without
purist,
I guess you can call me a purist when it comes to tacos.
What's your filling of choice?
Oh boy. So for example, there's this taco truck that I really love in Oaxaca that only opens for business at, I don't know, 9 at night. It goes till 3 or 4 in the morning. And their specialty is the lechoncito. So it's a baby pig. It's a suckling pig. And they only make, like, I don't know, 2 kinds of taco, so it's a baby suckling pig with chicharrón, a dusting of chicharrón. No more.
When's your next trip to Oaxaca, and can we come with you?
Please come with me. Please come visit me anytime. I leave for Oaxaca in a week.
Oh wow!
Oh, wow.
I was kidding, but you're actually going to Oaxaca.
I'm back and forth between Oaxaca and New York this year.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This was so much fun, and we got to taste all these different types of mezcal.
Thank you guys.
We got a couple more for after the show.
Absolutely.
Can you tell our listeners where to find you and when they can expect the first time to purchase Ursula?
Yes, you can find us at ursulamezcal.com or at ursulamezcal on Instagram. And we're currently working on our first shipment to the U.S. ETA, I would say late July or August, definitely later this year.
Awesome.
So stay tuned.
Great. And I'm Ethan Frisch. You can find me on Instagram at Burlap and Barrel, my spice company.
I'm Jenny Dorsey. You can always find me at Chef Jenny Dorsey. And you can find us at Why Food Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, want to nominate someone for the show.
Yes, please.
Please email us at whyfood@heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Well, that's history of mine. All the time. I don't know.